Great. Well, we're here with Rob O'Brien, who is a student at the University of Washington, transferred from a couple different places, and is majoring in law, society, and justice and philosophy. And I want to hear a little bit about your educational trajectory, where you started out, when, and how that all evolved into where you are now.
Well, I started out by going to community college in high school through Running Start. And then after that, I moved down to California, worked through the dot-com bubble, and then after the bubble popped, I went back to school, studied for a little bit, and then decided to move back up to Washington to pursue actually completing my degree and getting a bachelor's.
Okay. So when you started doing the Running Start back in, it was the late 90s?
Yeah, it was back in 94.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. At that point in time, were you thinking about, you know, where to go to college and what to do with yourself? Or was it just kind of part of the high school thing, or getting off the high school campus?
That's part of it. My high school had decided to close campus that year.
Oh.
So you could not leave the campus, and I lived 3 blocks from the college, so I didn't want to commute. But
and this
then
was Skagit Valley?
Yeah, from Skagit Valley College. And then also I started looking into it, and I got out a bunch of the requirements for admission to the University of Washington,
mm-hmm.
because back then I had planned to go straight after
mm-hmm.
high school and graduating. I wanted to go straight here, but then I got a job paying fairly well doing tech work,
mm-hmm.
so.
Great. And so how did you decide on law, society, justice, and philosophy?
Well, ever since I was in second grade,
mm-hmm.
I've wanted to be a lawyer.
Okay.
And then when I got here, I've always enjoyed reading philosophy since high school.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got here, I found out that those two majors are the second and fourth most common majors accepted into law schools.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they were the two majors that fascinated me the most. So I jumped in and rolled the statistical dice, and I'm hoping to get into law school based on that.
Okay, great. Now, you've done something that not very many students on campus have done. There was an engineering professor, I believe, last winter quarter, who took a group of students down to post-Katrina Mississippi, and you were one of them.
Yeah, Denise Wilson, she's an electrical engineering professor, ran the thing. It was, I believe 12 students went. Well, 12 undergrads and one grad student went.
Mm-hmm.
And we went down there, spent over the 5 days of the week, one day was dedicated towards class, then one day was an optional project, whatever we wanted to do. Like, for instance, myself, I volunteered at a first grade class.
Mm-hmm.
Other people did various other cleanup jobs or whatever. And then we spent 4 or 3 days of the week that we were actually rebuilding houses, tearing out the old moldy insulation, putting up new drywall, painting the houses, just whatever we could to help the people recover.
Wow. Okay, now with a high-tech background
yeah.
and majoring in, you know, decidedly liberal arts majors, how did you get hooked up with this professor? How did you hear about this? And did you already have the skills to hang drywall?
Well, actually, I have worked in a machine shop over various summers. And so I had some basic knowledge of various tools. Like, I know how to work a drill and that. But also, I needed an internship. And when I was looking at internships, then my advisor sent out the email about this opportunity, and I noticed it had an internship and included in the opportunity to go down there. And I asked my advisor, hey, this is definitely a human rights issue. Can this count for my internship?
Mm-hmm.
And my advisor said that it looked like a perfect internship for that.
So now, Professor Wilson's class, though, was that on electrical engineering issues?
Yes, it was.
Yes. Oh, okay.
That was just a complete... there were 6 credits total between the 2 classes she had,
mm-hmm.
5 credit and a 1 credit class, and that was all on, like, the electrical aspects, looking at the power grids and what, from an engineering standpoint, went wrong.
Because the entire state lost power, is that right?
That's correct. I believe all of, 90-some percent of Mississippi, 80-some percent of Louisiana, and a large amount of people in Alabama all lost power.
Okay, even if they weren't, like, a direct hit from the coastal...
Right.
And all that.
Because the floodwaters went up 30 feet above sea level, and all the main distribution plants were only 10 to 15 feet above sea level, because they'd never seen a storm go more than 5 feet up. So that's part of what made it so extreme, and that just flooded out all the main distribution places for the power.
So what was a typical day, then, on the 3 days that you're helping to rebuild, what was that typically like? I mean, just tell me about the day.
Okay, well, we'd get up in the morning, and they'd tell us who needs how many people to do what jobs, like, if someone needed, and if someone had, like, had a particular experience. Like myself, I had worked with electricians a
mm-hmm.
few times, so they'd commonly send me with the electricians, and also I had some plumbing experience, so they'd send me with the plumbers, and then they'd assign out the job. Since I wasn't, like, a certified electrician or plumber, I got to do the more crawling through the attic, running the wire work, which was fun, and I got to learn a lot
mm-hmm.
from doing it. I actually have hands-on experience running wire and wiring up a house and replumbing a house.
Wow.
So,
what did you learn about human rights issues? And did you end up doing a paper for the internship credit?
I did. I wrote a paper on how it shocked me as a person to see people choosing to live in an area that they have to deal with this. And the more I researched into it, the more I realized anywhere you live, you have the fear of something happening. Like here in Washington, we have the fear of an earthquake, and in the Great Plains, they have fears of tornadoes. So, I mean, it's just you pick how you want to have your natural disasters, and the people there really like hurricanes as their natural disaster because they can see them 4 or 5 days in advance. Here in Washington, we have no idea when an earthquake will hit.
Do you think, though, that using the word choice, I mean, once the natural disaster has hit, I would imagine that there are a lot of people who actually don't feel as though there is a choice. How do you pick up and move when maybe there wasn't a rainy day account in the bank and the house is now destroyed? And, I mean, how do you think there's a lot of people who end up kind of geographically just stuck?
Yes, a lot of people were kind of stuck, especially with the entire insurance disaster that went on,
mm-hmm.
because now there's a ton of court battles from, for instance, there are 2 houses that we saw. All that were left of the 2 houses were a concrete slab. One of the houses had wind insurance but not flood insurance. The other house had flood insurance without wind insurance. They told one that it was the wind. The one without wind insurance, they told them it was the wind that destroyed their house, and they told their next door neighbor it was the water that destroyed their house when they didn't have flood insurance.
How infuriating.
Yeah, so how can 2 neighbors, houses side by side, same level, how can it be opposite reasons? So, I mean, even people who thought they had the rainy day fund, they just didn't. A lot of people did move further inland. The teacher of the first grade class that I volunteered at, she ended up moving into Baton Rouge, which is 60 miles inland. But a lot of people just simply don't have the resources there, too. And they're dependent upon their FEMA trailers as a place to live. So.
And what about the first grade class? Was that, what kind of experience was that?
That was so amazing. I have so much respect for those kids. Those kids would get up and be waiting for the bus at 6 a.m. because a bunch of the elementary schools were all washed out, so they had to go to this one elementary school, and it wasn't necessarily the closest to where they were, but it was the one that had the facility to handle that many kids. They'd be out waiting for the bus 5:30, 6 in the morning, then classes didn't start until 9, and then they'd go through the day of class, be out of school at 2:30, and then they'd load into the bus, and then the buses would drive over to the high school, where they'd wait for a half hour for the high school to end before going home, and they'd get home, the ones who lived further out, not until 5 p.m. So, yeah, we're talking 11 and a half hours for a first grader.
Yeah, I'm a mother of a almost 6-year-old. And yeah, that would be a very long day.
Yeah.
Very long day.
That's a long day for me, let alone someone of that age, yeah.
Yeah. So, next then is law school?
I want to take a year off after I graduate and then go on to law school.
And in the year, do you have any particular goals, or is it just time to take a little bit of a breather?
It was time so that way I could focus on studying for the LSAT. Also, just to relax, try not to do anything that's too intellectual, just to kind of let my mind relax for a year.
Great. Now, there may be students around the state out there listening to this interview who are, you know, running start students, not sure exactly what's next. Do you have any advice about the actual transfer process to the U? Anything that worked really well for you, or anything that you wish you'd done differently?
Take your 3/4 of Spanish before, or whatever foreign language before transferring here.
We emphasize that one a lot, yes.
I only took 2/4 of Spanish, the minimum requirement to get in here, and now I'm 10 years later
trying to
do that.
Third class. And everybody else on the campus wants the same class.
Right.
It's hard to get registered for.
Yeah, there's a lot of competition for that. The other thing is, just make sure the classes that you're taking or looking at taking are ones that will transfer here. And if you have a specific department, talk to that department about what you should be looking at before to get the requirements to get into the class.
Which is difficult.
Or into the major, sorry.
Yeah, difficult when you're a running start student because, of course, the state mandates pretty tightly which high school requirements you're completing on the college campus, and so sometimes it's very difficult to explore, what do I even want to major in? Well, I don't know yet. I'm taking what I'm supposed to take to get that high school degree.
Yeah.
So, we can, in fact, put up a link to the course equivalency guide where students can hear, they can see exactly online what courses at Skagit Valley or Columbia Basin transfer in as what UW courses, so we can put that up as well. Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.